day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings. We hide our emotions by painting smiles upon our faces. It's what we do best. Everything is fine. It's just an ordinary dismissal.
Hi, I'm Amy Dunstan and I'm one of the assistant heads at Birchwood Special School in Melton Mowbray.
Hi, I'm Robbie Hesketh and I'm one of the teachers in the autism provision at Birchwood School in Melton Mowbray.
And I'm Rosalind Hopkins, head teacher. So in this week's podcast, we're going to look at how we supported staff to return to work after they had been socially isolating, and also what happened when we had some confirmed cases of the coronavirus in our school community.
I think we needed to do quite a lot to build up staff confidence, because equally staff had been at home for quite a long period of time. And, you know, the information at the time wasn't that clear about whether or not children and young people were kind of super spreaders of the virus. And if the young people were in school, what was the likelihood that they would be passing it on to adults, but without showing any symptoms? So I think there were some staff that were a bit nervous about their health implications of being in school. But also the other thing to remember is that unlike a mainstream environment, in a special school, you could be working with as many adults as you are young people. So again, it's that working in close proximity with others outside your family unit, whereas, you know, a lot of staff, the only people they'd mix with for some period of time was their own families. Renee, our school business manager, was really good at having a lot of those conversations with staff, but lots of teachers talking to their teams and talking to their staff members and just making sure that they understood what had been put in place for them, and giving some staff coming into school and just having a little bit of a tour of the building again before the young people came back. And I do think that actually for lots of people, psychologically, it was a real moment to walk through the door again.
Yeah.
And I think that was really difficult. And on that first morning, I felt wobbly, not because I hadn't been in, but because I'd asked lots of other people to come into school. And obviously that sense of responsibility is huge. But again, what suddenly made everything feel okay was once the young people arrived.
Yeah, I think the way that Renee's done some of those, as we've had more staff join over the weeks, she's invited staff in before their first day just to come in for 20 minutes and kind of have a walk around whilst the young people were here, whilst other staff were in, just have a walk around and see how the zones are working, how actually the school feels like a calm and as safe as possible place it can be. And those reactions of staff, you're right, Roger, you know, we had people that were walking in the door and crying, and Ren did an amazing job of supporting them through that. But by the time they left, I actually can't think of an exception. They left because as they'd walked down the corridor, the staff were so welcoming to see them back, you know, in that same way, just, you know, fantastic to see you. Staff talking about the PPE and how yet when I first put a mask on, it's a bit tricky to breathe, and then joking about your glasses steaming up and what you need to do to stop your glasses steaming up. And by the time those members of staff left, half an hour later, they were sort of, you know, coming to see me on the way out, say, Amy, yeah, I'm ready, put me on the rotor. It's been lovely to be back in school. It's been incredible to see the young people. Rendered lots of work involved, but I think it really encouraged and supported and helped staff to feel positive about coming back.
So I genuinely haven't heard a single negative thing about anybody sort of coming into the school building and not feeling confident, like you say, after about 20 minutes. And every single time we have seen someone, I think it's a collective sort of responsibility that you make them feel welcome, you make them feel safe, and you make it feel that this is what we do. And it's okay to feel those anxieties. It's okay to feel worried, but we will work together as a team and we'll help everybody through it.
So when I wrote to parents about the school's wider opening, I distinctly remember the last couple of paragraphs of the letter was all about what would happen should we get a confirmed case in school. And there'd been a couple of scares prior to this, but quite distinctively, a couple of weeks ago, we had to sort of really test the rotor. We had to test the bubbles and zones and really consider whether or not what we had in place worked when we got those phone calls. So there was a couple of instances. The first one was via a young person being exposed to the virus via transport, the transport that they got to school. Because for those people that aren't aware, young people that come to special school are frequently transported via local authority minibuses, or in some cases, taxis. And that's how they get to school, because our catchment area is a really wide location. So that was the first contact that a student had had via transport. The second contact was a young person who there was a family member who lived with them that had been had tested positive. And then the third one, which is probably the closest that any of us would have come into direct contact with a confirmed case that we were aware of, was another member of staff who had tested positive for the virus. And those communications, and then it's just typical to do anything, I think, in life, always seem to come late in the afternoon or at a weekend. When it's like, not only now do we have to trace back what's going to happen, but we've got to look at the timing of how what we're going to do is going to impact people in terms of getting that communication out. So that's just one annoyance, is that it never happens. You never get that information at a convenient time.
Happy Father's Day.
It was.
Woo-hoo! Happy to get a test. I'm going.
That was my day.
So that's one memorable moment. But one of the phone calls that came through about it, I was actually on a, you know, part of this new normal, and we all hate that expression now, but I don't know a better one yet. We were having a Zoom governor's meeting, so I had all the governors there, and my phone rang, and I thought, well, they all know I'm in a governor's meeting, so I'll just ignore that. And I ignored it, and it went away, and then they phoned again. I was like, right, okay, that's a bit weird. So I picked up the phone in the Zoom governor's meeting and said hello, and the voice said, Roz, you need to mute because I've got something to tell you. So your heart sinks and you know what that information is going to be. So that was the first one late in the afternoon in the middle of a governor's meeting. And you know, when you look at your mobile phone and you've got a few missed phone calls from your assistant head on a Sunday afternoon and text messages saying, phone me urgently, that it can only be one thing during this phase of our lives, and that is that somebody's tested positive. And then going into that scenario where on a Sunday afternoon you are phoning parents, and they know when they get a phone call from the head teacher on a Sunday afternoon that it can only be one thing, and that is that case that you're letting a family know that their child has come into direct contact with the virus. So the whole bubble zones scenario playing out, Anna's having to ask a group of young people to stay at home for a couple of weeks, and then the questions sort of in your head are, can that young person be tested? Is it worth testing them? Because if they've had direct contact, they have to stay at home anyway. Part of our protocol and procedure is to phone Public Health England and get advice about what actions and steps we should take within the school building. And then, of course, I think Amy picked up this job this time, phoning staff and telling them that they'd had contact. So that sense of responsibility that you've asked all these people to come into school to do their job, and then having to round that off with a thank you very much, but probably what was your worst fear has happened. Those conversations and phone calls, Amy, how did you feel about them?
Well, yeah, again, like we say, it was a Sunday evening, so I imagine that those staff members that were getting those phone calls, and I did, you know, it took a few phone calls to get through to most members of staff, and leaving messages saying it's Amy from school and I really need to speak to you, because it's not the sort of thing you want to drop on a voicemail. So anxiety provoking, I think, in my position as well, knowing that as a member of SLT, I'm in quite a rare position of, I do go into a variety of bubbles. So knowing that I had also had contact with that member of staff, with those young people. So there was my own anxieties played out against trying to sensitively pass on that message to staff. But again, ensuring, I think one of the things that we do, or certainly something that's, I probably learnt it from you, Ros, but often before I've got to make those tricky phone calls, I will set myself a bit of a script of how I'm going to deliver that message. Certainly if I'm delivering a message that's potentially going to cause distress or anxiety for whoever it is I'm speaking to. So I kind of had sat down before during the period when I was trying to get hold of you, Ros, and had written myself the script of what I would say, and just being really clear about what the guidance was again. So certainly I know that over the following days, families that you had spoken to on that Sunday, because of course they were hearing that information, which was anxiety provoking information, and then perhaps not taking in fully all of the steps and the guidance. So having those phone calls with staff and families in the following days, making that message clear, like you've just alluded to, that regardless of whether the young person had a test, and should the test come back negative because they had direct contact, they were still, you know, the guidance was that they were still to stay off school and isolate for the following 2 weeks. So I think with all those phone calls, that they're not very nice, but I try and be really clear about what it is that I'm asking that member of staff to do, or what it is that I'm explaining to that parent, that I'm clear in a time where perhaps they might be anxious.
I always feel like I need to apologise to you after those situations, because you give me the information and I don't think I ever remember to say, are you okay? Do you feel all right? Because it's not like you're immune to the information yourself, but I always find myself like going into, I don't know whether it's like a kind of crisis mode that you go into, but I always find myself, okay, so what do we need to do? Well, we need to phone the parents. We need to contact staff. We need to make sure everybody knows so that they can come forward if they think they've had contact with somebody from that bubble. And I kind of go into quite a business-like mode. Does that, I mean, you can be honest with me. Is it, do I sound a bit robotic? Because I feel it.
Be honest.
No, I think that's, it's part of it. It's like that first aid response, isn't it? That to respond calmly, but to look at what steps need to be done. I think you do have that thing, Ros, where you switch on to autopilot, and luckily your autopilot is incredibly effective and manages, puts out steps. And because of that conversation that I have with you, and we'll talk something through in your direct way, does help with then me making sure that I disseminate that information in the correct way.
Receiving one of those calls, for me, it just told me what to do. Clear guidance, and I understood what I had to do. I mean, I'm not happy about it because now I've got to stay with my own children, but, you know. But it was clear.
But I think, in all joking aside, I know that realistically you were having to then go back to your partner and look at your children and think, have I brought something into the house? And I know from our conversations that's something that's always been on your mind, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's I kind of go through sort of waves where you have like peaks of anxiety, and I wouldn't say that I'm somebody that suffers massively with anxiety, but I think it's a different kind of anxiety that we're feeling throughout this situation. And if you've got family members that sort of rely on you. And I've got two young boys, and it's, you come away thinking, this is my fault. I've put them in this situation, and they could become poorly. It could be worse. So yeah, it's a tricky one. But the thing is, I come in and I do it because I love what I do. I love my job, and I love working at Birchwood. So you've got to just weigh it up, haven't you? And I think I felt that from the start, I needed to do my bit. That's how I felt. It was. I needed to do my role for the students that I work with. They need the support. The parents need the support. The staff need the support. And I felt that for me personally, I know everyone's got sort of different ideas and different opinions on it, but for me, it was I needed to come in. I need to do it for everybody else. And I needed to do it for myself. But yeah, getting that call, and because it's not the first time. It's twice now for me. It's kind of like, okay, the second time round, it's you kind of get used to it. It's like, okay, off for my test and we'll see how it goes.
I think this particular time, though, the one a couple of weeks ago was really, really bad timing. I think it actually made me feel as nervous as I've ever felt, because I do think nationally and definitely within our community, everyone's started to relax a little bit, if I'm honest. Yeah. And I think we'd all got to the point where we thought, is it really going to hurt if I hug my mum or my dad on Father's Day, or if I share a plate or something, and without wanting to say anything that puts anybody in a difficult position with their families. I know that I just feel like, weirdly, not so much with my children and my husband, because I think they're okay. I suppose I don't see them as vulnerable, which I hope doesn't sound awful, but certainly with my own mum and dad, who are really heavily involved with our family. They live around the corner. They've always done lots of childcare, which has allowed me to do the job I do. You know, from a personal point of view, I've had to change everything about that. But I was just getting to the point where I was having a bit closer contact with everybody, and beginning to just let those barriers down a little bit. And I think everybody was just feeling like it was a little bit more okay. I think we were losing some of that willpower not to hug people that you love. And that, and then the timing. So the timing of it all was really, really, really just made you feel guilty, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
In some way.
Yeah.
Did you get any of that, Amy? Did you feel a bit like that?
Yeah. And I know when I did speak to Robbie on that evening, and probably in the conversation with you as Roz, we were reflecting that for me had been my most social weekend that I'd had for weeks and weeks and weeks. Now, that's not saying that obviously I wasn't out on a beach anywhere, but what I was doing was I'd had a socially distanced afternoon fishing with my dad. I had been and spent time with my best friend and my two nieces, and we'd shared a meal outside together. You know, I'd seen lots of people, well, lots of people in context of how many people I'd seen in the previous weeks. And then suddenly this thing on Sunday. So for me, I was definitely reflecting on the time that I'd, and worrying about the time that I'd spent with my dad, just for various reasons. He's slightly more, well, he is more vulnerable, and it took a lot for him to agree to come fishing with me. So yeah, the timing was tricky.
Yeah, because I had a sort of a similar thing, in the sense it was my granddad's 90th birthday, and they've been shielding for the entire time. And I made a point of not going when there was going to be more people there, and I'd seen them midweek. Yeah, and then you're obviously thinking, oh man, if I do test positive, I'm going to have to tell my granddad who's just turned 90 and my grandma is 88. So it was a tricky one.
And I just think for us as well, psychologically, because we've been in work throughout this whole time, we are out and about, obviously doing things in a really responsible and sensible way. I think in some ways it almost makes you feel more safe than maybe you are, because you've not experienced what it's like to be completely socially isolating, except obviously now you have, Robbie, but we've not had a great deal of that, just locking the doors and buttoning the hatches and just staying in your units. And I know that that has been really, really difficult for lots of families who've had to do that for an extended period of time. But I have to be honest to say that there's times where I felt like I wish I could have just locked the world out and said, this is us staying safe now, and this is me keeping people beyond that door safe too, other people that I love and care about safe, but by not stepping out. We've not been able to do that, and that has been had its positives, definitely, because we've still had that interaction of people outside the home, which is great in lots of ways, but it has put me in a strange place mentally, I think, in terms of how I deal with the safety side of it, and how I think about starting to have contact with family, it's kind of, on one hand, I'm thinking I'm the person that needs to stay away from my extended family because I'm the person that is the risk factor. And I don't know whether they feel like that about me, but that's something that's something that crosses my mind a fair bit. Do you guys get that at all, or is it different?
Yeah, I feel exactly the same, Roz.
Yeah, I don't want to make anyone feel bad by thinking like that, but it does, it crosses your mind. But then and then what revives me is, but I know that we are really careful in school. I know that in school we've got very, very high standards of safety. And going back to that risk assessment, the reason that we've got those high standards of safety is because actually we tend to put ourselves last, and we do think about everybody else. But in thinking about everybody else, that ensures that we're also protecting people beyond the school as well, in terms of our own family. So the good news, I guess, is that even though we had those cases, beyond the person that tested positive, nobody else tested positive for the virus, even though they'd come into close contact, which suggests that those safety measures are having a positive effect. They're working to some extent, and that's why we need to keep going with them.
Yeah, I think we're really lucky to have all those safety measures in place. I know I certainly have reflected on lots of occasions that during this pandemic where lots of people who didn't ask to be key workers didn't recognise that within their line of work, which was desperately low paid and undervalued, that suddenly they were going to be the people that were going to be expected to potentially expose themselves and their families day in, day out. But I feel really grateful for the fact that my key worker role has brought me to a space where, you know, where the safety measures in place have been so robust, and we've been really lucky in terms of the acquirement of PPE and managing to put things in place as swiftly as possible. But yeah, I do feel for that whole idea of, you can feel quite proud about being a key worker, but for lots of people, I don't imagine it was a role that it wasn't what they signed up for.
Definitely not.
It's interesting for us to end on that reflection from Amy as I edit this podcast. We originally got together to record that episode at the end of June. The nation's gratitude to key workers, NHS workers in particular, was still in evidence. Just a short space of time on, and today, August the 8th, thousands of NHS workers are holding socially distanced demonstrations and marches around the UK. This is in the wake of the government announcement that almost 900,000 public sector workers, including teachers and doctors, will be given an above inflation pay rise, whilst millions of NHS staff, such as nurses, cleaners and care assistants, will not be included in this due to previous pay agreements. For many, this decision is hard to understand after the clapping and rhetoric of gratitude. I imagine there are many key workers who will be feeling the same.
The day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings.
Moving on to next week's episode, I'll be talking to our parent governor, Kerry Clarkson, about her experiences of lockdown, and Hannah O'Mara, our profound and multiple learning difficulties lead teacher. So bye for now.
It's what we do best. Everything is fine. It's just an ordinary dismissal.